I'd like to welcome to our studio a couple of special guests, that one of whom I've had a chance to meet in a prior encounter just a few months ago. I want to welcome Michael and Michelle Combs to EAA Radio. Thanks for coming out this morning.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having
us, guys.
Now, let's make sure your mics are working again. So say hi again.
Hi again.
Hi again.
Okay, great. Thanks. So, Michael and Michelle Combs are husband and wife and partners in the Flight for the Human Spirit. And I'll ask you to kind of step us through what your project is and what your goal is. But I'll say before you start, I met Michael on one of the early days of this project when he was flying through Indianapolis and was weathered in at Mount Comfort Airport. Had a chance to talk with you, was inspired by some of the things that you talked about, and I asked you to please let me have you again when we get to Air Venture. So you made good on that promise, and I'm so grateful that you did and that Michelle came with you as well. So some of the questions that I'll be asking you are kind of in the context of, well, back then we talked about, and so since then, what have you found? So, and we'll have, you know, the next 25 minutes to kind of talk about the things that you've seen. So tell us about the project, the Flight for the Human Spirit.
Well, Mike, I tell you, the Flight for the Human Spirit is, it's a grassroots project really aimed to encourage people to follow their dreams, whatever those dreams are. Just because we're flying an airplane doesn't necessarily mean we're targeting only aviation members or fans. And I guess that approach has really worked, because we've had a lot of people who are developing businesses, or one guy proposed to his fiance last fall because of this project. So it's very interesting. But our primary audience certainly is aviators.
So by the numbers, what are the goals of the project? You're going to hit?
Goals of the project. Well, let's just look at what we're doing. We're flying a Remos light sport aircraft, a Remos GX, into all 50 states. Took off from Salina, Kansas last April. 135 scheduled stops, and that number's gone up. I had 19,400 miles for the total distance, and it's going to be well over closer to 22,000.
22,000 miles in a Remos GX.
Yeah, 135 cities is what we had scheduled, and I think we're up over that now too.
Oh yeah.
Okay, wow. So against those totals, where are you right now? How many miles? How many airports? How many days of flying?
Right now, it's pretty cool. We have officially reached 40 states. A little over 14,000 miles coming in here to Oshkosh, and I don't know how it worked out this way, but Oshkosh was stop number 100.
Wow.
Perfect.
It doesn't get any better.
No, it doesn't.
Wow. So your 100th airport in, what, 3 months?
Right.
And you're not a high-time pilot at this point, right?
No.
And I think that's what makes this story so fascinating. I mean, it's fascinating to different people in different ways, but... I received my wings last October.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's just a lot of flight time since then. Yeah. If you're not a high-time pilot now, you will be when you're done.
Oh, no kidding. So. You know, it's interesting just all the experience I've gained already.
I can imagine.
It's unbelievable.
So you've been to 90-odd unfamiliar airports, right?
Oh, yeah.
So what's the rhythm like for planning to go to an airport you've never seen and have that happen maybe a couple, three times every day that you're flying?
The rhythm is very interesting, and it's interesting you mentioned rhythm, because that's exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. We have such a rhythm when we reach the hotel, which is typically, what, Michelle, 8 or 9 o'clock the night before we're going to fly. So we don't really have a lot of time when you try to factor some sleep into the mix. But we sit down and go through the notes. I've already arranged every turn, every waypoint along the way, so I don't have to figure all of that out. But then it's a matter of making sure that we're still good for that airport the next day. There's no TFRs, that the weather is still good. And it usually takes about 2 hours to prepare for the next day of flight. And then, of course, the next morning you're in the plane and programming the GPS and reviewing airport diagrams and everything else, just to make sure that you are as prepared as possible.
We're usually up till about 1 in the morning every night, and then people wonder why we don't get an early start the next day. We try. An early start to us is off the ground by 8. So,
And typically, how many hours are you spending in the air a day before you feel like, wow, this is about as much as I want to do?
Actually, the actual flight time is typically anywhere from 4.5 to 8 hours. Depends on the distance and the number of stops. Of course, if we have more stops built in, the most stops that we've built in have been 6 per day, which is a lot of brain damage. If you think about flying into 6 brand new airports that you've never been to a day. But of course, we're on the ground meeting fans at each one of those stops, so that can be as much as 6 ground hours during the flight day as well.
So as you've stopped at these airports, I know that you've found pretty warm audiences in a lot of places.
It's been amazing.
And so talk a little bit about the people that have responded to the program, the kind of responses that you've gotten, and how this compared to with what you expected.
You know, I'm going to answer the first one, or the second one first. I really didn't know what to expect. I remember last year when I was here at Oshkosh, I was a little intimidated because when I was here a year ago, I wasn't a pilot or a pilot license.
Wait a minute. 12 months ago, before this thing started, you weren't licensed, right?
Correct.
My goodness.
Someone had to ferry Hope One here so it could be on display for me, but I couldn't fly it, which was a funny feeling. So I really, even a year ago, I was wondering how this project would be received by fellow pilots.
Were people taking you seriously last year?
Well, I think when the plane was here, yes.
Okay.
But not really.
Wow.
In fact, I've got a great point. Don't let me forget this point.
Okay.
Because I found out something yesterday that will really make you laugh. But really getting back to your original question, the fans have been unbelievable. We have been received so warmly at many of the sites that we've stopped at. Now, don't get me wrong. It's not like we have throngs of people waiting. Sometimes there's nobody. We'll just get out of the plane and say, this is a quick turnaround, you know, and we can get on schedule. But I tell you, some of these cities have been absolutely unbelievable. And what's cool is we're really getting more and more media attention as we go along. Flying up here from Denton, our home base, last week, we had 2 news crews in Tulsa. And one of them was even flying with us in a helicopter. So they're starting to really take this flight seriously.
And the media is an important part. I don't think that we really covered that in our goals, the numbers of our goals. But the media is a really important piece because our goal is to reach 20 million people with the message that it's never, ever too late to follow your dreams. So the media is our easiest way to reach people who are non-pilots, bring people into aviation, and then also to inspire them along their path, their other paths in life. I mean, aviation's not Mike's only love and only dream. It's one of many.
Now, Mike, there was an event in your life that sort of started you down this path and firmed up your commitment to become a pilot. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Ever since I can remember, I've always known I would fly. And it was always a dream of mine to be up in the air. And I mean, always looking at an airplane, even today, if there's an airplane flying over our house, I'll go back outside and look and see what it is. And looking at clouds, of course, there's none today in the sky, thank God. But looking at clouds, it's just, you know, I need to be there. A lot of people listening can relate to this, where you've had a dream that you want to go to a certain place to travel, or eat at a certain restaurant, or drive a certain car, or live in a certain house, or whatever that might be. I let that dream go. And I let it go through nothing but excuses. It's too expensive to learn to fly. I don't have an airplane. What will I do if I get my license and I don't have an airplane to fly, and on. I have kids. On and on and on it went. In August of 2003, I became very, very ill. And that was in August, and it changed my entire life, and fortunately the lives of many millions of others now. So it ended up to be a good event, but at the time it sure didn't feel like it. That was in August. In December of 2003, it hit me like a ton of bricks that I'm never going to fly. And I just can't tell you what that feeling was. It's just, I had the chance to do this, and I let it go. That really was the start of the flight for the human spirit at that moment. I promised myself I was going to live my life with no regrets. And here I am.
Now, you're your recovery, which took quite some time, I understand, passed you through a period of time where you thought that you might be the passenger on this flight for the human spirit and Michelle might be the pilot, right?
That's true.
Right.
So what changed?
Well, you have to keep in mind, at that point, my life goals had changed. You know, you can say, okay, one of my life goals now is to conduct a symphony orchestra, okay? But back then, one of my life goals was just to have the strength to walk outside. That was a life goal of mine. It wasn't something I wanted to do. That became something that I wrote down that I wanted to do with my life, is have the strength to walk outside and see the sun once again. So my perception was completely different from what it is now. At that time, I thought, okay, when I'm well enough, I obviously won't be able to fly, but Michelle will be able to fly, and at least I'll be able to fulfill that dream down to the core of my soul. And I'm tapping my chest here, but down to the core of my soul, at least that dream will be fulfilled, that I will have flown.
And so, Michelle, you ended up, agreeing to be the pilot if that was necessary, but then it turned out not to be necessary because of the sport pilot rule.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I would just do whatever it took to help him have that dream. I don't know. I just can't live with myself if I didn't help somebody along their path, right? And yeah, I was really grateful, honestly, because I'm pretty technically savvy. I can handle it, but it's not my dream to fly. So I would do it for him, but not because I have that passion. I love to fly in the plane with him, but I'm not sure about the controls yet. I've said to people already that I will get my license, and I know I will, but it's I'm not there yet. But it's been nice to see that he found this other avenue to get his pilot's license and do something amazing.
Now, in our we've got about a minute to go in this segment before we need to take a break, but I want to tee up a couple of things that I want to cover in the next segment. One of them is, where did the sport pilot rules kind of play into your ability to move forward, and how does that alter how you think about your flying career now? And the other is, you're doing this almost unbelievable thing in a sport pilot in an SLSA. Mm-hmm. And there are some other folks that are doing some pretty amazing things in SLSA aircraft as well. Some of those we're getting a chance to talk to through the week. But they're not coming necessarily from the United States, where this is sort of new. We've got a group from Europe where aircraft of this type have been around and are kind of established. They're believed in perhaps a bit more. I want to talk to the reception that you've gotten as a light sport pilot in a light sport aircraft. And in fact, I'll go back in the memory banks and play something that you talked about with me in April and see what's happened since then.
See if
then
I'm eating my words
now.
Or not, huh?
Well, no, I mean, not to tip the hat, but I don't think you are, actually.
Yeah, good.
So hey, we'll be back with Michael, and go ahead.
Before we leave the segment, I just want to take 10 seconds just to say I'm in great health today. If you saw me today, you'd never know I was sick. So I don't want people to have that impression that, you know, I'm sucking oxygen just to get up the stairs to the booth here.
Yeah, no, in fact, when we talked, I think you had just run a foot race with a friend who was much younger, and you kind of embarrassed him, didn't you?
I will challenge anybody to a foot race. Any listener, come over to the Learn to Fly booth, and I'll challenge you to a race.
That's great. Michael and Michelle Combs will be back in just a couple of minutes. You're listening to EAA Radio.